Good evening, spooks and spookettes. Count Rahoon is here, and it is time for yet another feature of Fright. Before we begin tonight's show, let us tend to the castle-keeping notes. If you like our show and want to help us expand the tangled web, consider becoming a patron on our Patreon page. Spooks and Spookettes, we intend to take our show to the masses, to any venue that will have us, whether it is in our own back courtyard or across the nation, maybe even across the globe. Of course, in order to do that, we need to fill our coffers in order to cover the gas and food our actors need. Become a patron today and your dollar, or dollars, will help us grow and make the show all it can be. Join the ranks of Yancey Pearson, Rhonda Gentry, Lucas Lanius, Nicole Johnson, Morgan Mitchell, Courtney O'Halloran, Tyler Laney, and Stephen Duke. Go to patreon.com/drahoon to give today. Now that that is out of the way, let us get into the heart of the matter, and hopefully you won't feel the need to drive a stake through it. Tonight we have yet another edition of Interviewed by a Vampire. Tonight I am joined by the cast and crew of a horror film called Jed. This is a little different from most of the horror films that we discuss on the show. This is a first. Jed is an LGBTQ horror film. Now, horror has a long history of being intertwined with the LGBTQ community. Many early pioneers of the genre were LGBTQ, and some works of literature and film were analogous to homosexuality and other LGBTQ-related topics. I think tonight is a perfect segue into the subject, and with that, I will now turn it over to Lauren and Laura May, the cast and crew of Jed. Lauren, Laura May, welcome to Count Rahoon's Feature of Fright.
Hello.
Hey.
So, if you can, give us a quick synopsis of Jed and your roles in the film.
Okay. I wrote Jed, I directed it, and I've been editing it as well. Jed is about a group of girls who get together after being apart for a while. All of them are of the LGBT community. They decide to go camping, and when they go camping, they run into a couple of brothers that aren't as, they're not necessarily strangers, and they figure that out the longer they're there. And these brothers basically try to murder them. So the story is these girls trying to get away and survive and figure out what's going on.
I'm Laura May, and I play Kim in Jed. And I kind of feel like I'm the only smart one of the group. And I am also, I'm the only bisexual of the group of girls. So, yeah, I'm trying to think of more details of my character.
Yeah.
That doesn't sound lame.
So, smart and bisexual is the biggest takeaway.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
So, Lauren, this may be more for you, but Laura May, you're more than welcome to chime in, of course. Why specifically an LGBTQ horror film? Is there something about this particular genre that stands out to you, and do you think it can catch on for general audiences?
Well, I'm a lesbian, and every horror movie that I watch, for the most part, there's just not any representation for lesbians in horror movies, unless it's like sexualized in some sort of way. So really the goal is to just try and make a horror movie with LGBT characters, with actual LGBT actors. That was another thing that we were trying to do, is make sure that the bulk of our cast playing these characters are actually part of the LGBT community. And really it's kind of like we just trying to push some equal representation for everyone. And for me, I try to make films with LGBT characters, not just in horror, but in dramas. Working on a couple of other things, like working on a web series comedy that's going to have some aspects of LGBT community in it, as well as I did a short film. Actually, Laura was in the short film earlier this year, and it was an LGBT story as well, and it was a drama. So really, we're just trying to change the way things are a little bit. So it's not just the same story being told over and over. And hopefully, you know, the dream is that when someone hears, oh, there's this movie, here's the plot, and they're lesbians, and the initial reaction is that, oh, is it porn? Or, you know, maybe people will eventually stop feeling the need to emphasize, like, this is a lesbian movie, and they can just be like, it's a movie, here's the plot, and it not really be like this strange idea. So I'm hoping that the general audiences can connect with it. The characters that are in the story, they each kind of have their own personality, and I'm really hoping that they all connect with some of the relationships that I've built within the story. And I think they don't necessarily have to be a member of the LGBT community themselves in order to relate and enjoy what's happening.
And that was actually my next question. You would rather, for you, it seems that you would like audiences to see this as just a good horror film that happens to be that happens to have LGBTQ themes, as opposed to an LGBTQ horror film. Is that a correct assumption?
Yeah, and I mean, obviously, we are pushing it as an LGBT horror film because there aren't many out there, and we're hoping that by doing that, we'll encourage more people to go that route as well.
Of course. Besides your film, you said there aren't that many out there. Are there any, are there a few that you can name off the top of your head by chance?
The two that come to mind that I watched a while back when I was younger and just starting to get into this, there's this horror movie, it's French, I believe, and it's called High Tension. There's a lot of weird stuff going on in there. It's kind of like a psychological horror. And it kind of doesn't really give away anything about these characters being gay until the very, very end. And you find out that one of them had a crush on the other one. And so that kind of, after seeing that, I was like, wow, why didn't they do more with that? Like, why did they leave it like that? And it kind of works on two levels, where on the one side, I'm like, well, that's really cool that they can tell the story and be like a gay movie, but you know, they don't focus on it and that's not like their hook. So I'm like, that's great. But on the other hand, it's like, man, we don't get to see this enough. I really would have liked to see this like fleshed out more. So there's that one. And kind of the same thing with this other horror movie that I saw a while back. If I were to watch it now, I would probably be like, man, that's not that great. But it was called Five Girls. I don't know if you've heard of that one. Mm-hmm. It's like Catholic school for like kids who got in trouble or whatever, like high school. And again, the same thing. You don't really get any of those relationships until the very end of the movie. And it's only for a second. And it's, you know, the same kind of dilemma, like, well, we can pitch it and use it as a hook, or we can just let it be as a story, and that's just part of it, but we don't focus on it. So just kind of interesting. And I personally want to be able to play with that as well in my films.
It's interesting because doing the research, my homework for this particular interview, it came to mind, from my perspective, although really up until fairly recently, there hasn't necessarily been an LGBTQ horror genre, so to speak. However, I think it's interesting to point out that the history of the LGBTQ community has always in some way been intertwined with the history of horror. If you look back in the early days of film, James Whale, the director of Frankenstein and Bride of Frankenstein, a lot of film scholars and critics have noted that he used a lot of his shall we say, the inner strife of growing up as a gay man in post-Victorian England may have had a lot of influence for him when he constructed the scenario that ultimately became the films Frankenstein and the Bride of Frankenstein. And of course, you could also look at F.W. Murnau, and then of course, Clive Barker in more contemporary terms. He's been a very big horror icon, and as I'm sure he's been a big icon in the LGBTQ community as well, so.
That's cool. That's very interesting. Yeah, I didn't know that. That's really cool and interesting.
Yes, you and there's a lot of that, not just in horror films, but just Hollywood in general. A lot of the more iconic directors, George Cukor, for example, they've all left an indelible mark on Hollywood and filmmaking history. And there is in some of their films this subtext of dealing with their with the fact that they were, a lot of them were closeted gay men. And also back on horror, if I may for a second, there's an English actor, and actually it's interesting because James Whale worked with a lot of gay actors in his horror films. There's Colin Clive, who is actually, I believe he's rumored to be bisexual. And then Ernest Thesiger as well. If you've ever seen Bride of Frankenstein, he was the actor who played Dr. Pretorius. And for some film buffs, he is an icon of the LGBTQ community as well. Both great films. There's a lot of interesting backstories and subtext to look into if you ever have a chance.
Just real quick, can I say something real quick?
Yes, I'm sorry.
I think for me, it's just like there hasn't been like a very strong like group come out and like actually be the stars and cast of the movies and not be portrayed as weak or struggling or, you know, just having some kind of emotional issue as a gay or bisexual character.
Right.
I can't think of many.
No, and I do agree, and that's why having you on this evening is a pleasure for me, because I believe you are absolutely correct. Really up until, you know, films like yours and then other films that may have come just a few years before, no one has ever really, like you said, has had a chance to openly talk about these things. Up to this point, it's usually just been subtext and analogy. So you are absolutely, and I'm sorry if you think that I was trying to sidestep that. I most certainly
wasn't.
No, not at all. But no, you are correct. And that's why I want to learn more about your film, and particularly if you can you give us a quick breakdown of the process of the movie, how the idea first came about, and then ultimately the pre-production, the production, and then the editing, and where we stand now.
Oh, Lord. Okay. Well, let's back up to October 2017.
That's a long time ago.
yes, it was. I was talking to one of my friends, Kelly. And at this point, I had been making films, just kind of making short films, helping people with their films for like a year and a half or so. So not that long. And I was like, you know what? I want to do something bigger. Like, I want to do a feature. And I was like, I want to do horror, because I did a couple of short horror ones, but didn't really like scratch that itch. So I was like, all right, I'm going to do it. I'm going to come up with a horror movie, something that we can do with a really low budget, something that's realistic. And I want my characters to be LGBT, because that That's my dog. Sorry. But that's just kind of like what I know. And for me, that's what's easiest to write when making characters. So it honestly didn't take me that long to do the first draft. Probably took me a couple weeks. And I started the script the same month I finished the script, as far as a, you know, like a first draft goes. From October to December, I was making tweaks, calling around, messaging friends, trying to be like, how can we make this work? Do you want to do this? And at that point, I had kind of gathered a little bit of crew and got some locations in mind that I could use. And then in December, I was like, okay, like this is going to happen. And in December, I started making a production schedule for that next summer on like when we were going to shoot, where we were going to shoot. I scheduled a trailer shoot for April because I wanted us to all get together, run through a couple of scenes, make a trailer with it, and use it for fundraising for the film shoot. So I believe it was late December, early January is when I put out a casting call. And that's where we got most of our cast, which is how I met Laura. It was a little later before Laura joined us, though. It's funny because Kim was actually played by someone else for the trailer shoot. And then after the trailer shoot, that actress had to drop out due to a scheduling conflict. So then Laura jumped on board, and it was kind of a running joke for a little while about how she was not in the trailer, but she was in the movie. So yeah, so April, we shot the trailer. We did a couple of scenes at a different location than our main location in, I want to say, May. And then from, there were like 10 straight days at the end of July through early August in 2018 where we went to a friend of ours' land. She has like tons of woods and space and everything. And that's where we shot 90% of the movie, just those 10 days. So it was kind of a long process to get all of that scheduled and to get everything together, get all the props, get all the right people. You know, of course, making tweaks to the script since, you know, I wrote the original script in like a couple weeks. And I'm pretty sure I was making adjustments to the script like a couple days before we did the main shoot, just to make sure everything would work. For example, you gotta be able to change your script when it's needed. So I had written in originally a scene in a lake, and it was going to be a skinny dipping scene. The problem is that we didn't have a lake. We had a very shallow creek. So while, yes, we...
It was Ed Wood in reverse.
Yeah. So, I mean, they could have skinny dipped in the creek, and it would have been really awkward.
Right.
So it's kind of like at the last minute, we had to be like, okay, We got to rework it, and we did what we could to keep the concept of what happens in the original scene and like the point that it made. So I think we did okay with that, changing that up. So after we finished shooting, there was a big lull in editing. Normally, well, sometimes people will either want to start editing right away or people will be like, I need a minute because I just did a lot of stuff and I need to breathe for a minute. So I kind of had the latter approach. I was like, okay, I need a minute. But like that was like 10 days of packed stuff. Like we were shooting until 6:30 in the morning, a couple of nights. And my laptop that I edit with decided to just kind of crap out on me, and I couldn't edit the film because I didn't have any technology to do so. And I'd pass it off to a friend, and she organized it for me, just like organized the video and audio, and synced a few of the scenes, which was great. And then at that point, my computer was still not cooperating. But luckily, I had a friend I went to college with, who's one of my best friends that doesn't live that far from me, Graham, who's the other editor, I pass the footage off to him. And he synced the rest of it for me. And by this point, my laptop was cooperating enough. So I got the footage back and I edited the movie on my laptop that kept freezing and lagging and restarting and all out glitching because we used 4K files. My laptop wasn't having it, but I pushed through it somehow. I edited for like 9 hours a day for like 3 weeks straight, and I got it done. I passed it back to Graham, and he did the color, and he helped me make sure I didn't miss anything with the sound and all of that. And once that happened, we're into like, what is it now? What is this month? September? I think it was beginning of August, late July. It was like early July when I sent it to the visual effects guy, Tyler, and he sent me back visual effects within a couple of weeks, and then I had to send it to the music composer. So right now, it is in the hands of the music composer. he's making headway. He's about halfway through it at this point. And our plan right now is to show it to the cast and crew on November 9th. So it's almost there. Like 2 years later.
I think the editing process is probably the most brutal story ever told on this podcast. So,
I mean, it's the truth, man. That's what happens. Something always goes wrong, but luckily we didn't lose any footage. So
would you say that was probably the more challenging part of the whole process, or is there something that comes to mind that may have been a bit more rigorous?
That's a hard question to answer. I think overall, I really did enjoy the experience, mm-hmm. and the experience that's still happening. I'm hoping that that was the hardest part and that there's not a harder part ahead.
I was going to say, how can it get more difficult than that?
I know. That's why I'm like, man, I can't even imagine what would happen at this point. I don't know.
Well, we'll just knock on wood for now. How about that?
I was going to say, don't say that.
I know. I guess just getting it edited, like being able to have my computer cooperate and me like pulling my hair out for 9 hours a day for 3 weeks, like, oh my God. Because I would fix something and then my computer would freeze and it would crash. No, and then have to go back and do it again before it would crash again and save it. It was the whole thing.
So for both of you, what do you think was the more the most rewarding part of this process?
You can go first, Lauren.
Oh, that would be quite easy for me. I would definitely say it was being with this great cast and crew and becoming a part of their family, meeting people I had not met before and just feeling so much love on set and so much support. And working with Lauren was so amazing. She had like, everything was so laid out as, you know, this is what we're doing, you know, this is where we're going to go, and here's how to be safe, and here's, you know, like, there are a few scenes that are very emotional in the movie, and as an actor, getting to those emotional places can be very tiring and strenuous, and, you know, and just having the support and having my space and having people on set, you know, even saying, just watching out for me and protecting me and making sure I was okay and I was good. And just, I made so many friends doing this movie that I'm still connected with. And one of the most exciting things about seeing the movie is being back with them, with that, you know, that same group.
So for both of you, what do you want audiences to take away from Jed?
Honestly, I just want people to watch it. I want them to have fun watching it and enjoy it. I want them to maybe think, I want them to like be inspired to do it themselves, you know? I want them to watch it and be like, that looked like it was a lot of fun. Like, I want to do that. Maybe, like, if they have had that urge before, maybe it's a nice encouragement. Like, you know, if these people can do it who have never done it before, I can do it. I can try, you know, at least try. And I want people to watch it and think, these are LGBT characters. Okay, but I still liked the movie. So
I would probably say that I want somebody to see it on like Amazon or something and say, hey, look at that actor. I like her. I like her. Two, it's just I want them to say, being a female in the acting biz, a lot of the main roles go to men, unfortunately. And I want them to see this movie and say, this was a movie full of some great women. And they...
Sorry.
The children of the night are calling.
And that, you know, we're strong women and we can carry these lead roles.
So you said that the goal right now is to have the film totally in the can by November 9th so that the cast and crew may view it. From here, are there any other immediate plans in terms of a premiere or a festival run?
I'm wanting to do some festivals before doing a few more public screenings. So ideally, we could run a festival circuit. And then maybe release it around next Halloween for everyone, since it's a horror movie. Mm. You know, people love horror on Halloween, you know, except for the diehard horror fans like me who on Valentine's Day looking at movies and like, oh, there's the best
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can relate to that. Yes, horror films on Halloween, that makes total sense. It's like ice and water.
Yeah.
But for me, I watch them. Well, I mean, like, that's all I watch almost.
Sorry, that was a really bad pun. You need to call me out on
man,
this.
I ain't in it, so.
For me, the first thing I thought of was, like, I drink my water room temperature. I don't.
Oh, okay. Oh, I see.
You're one of those humans. So now I know who I'm dealing with.
She's crazy.
But aren't we all? Think about it. You willingly signed up to be interviewed by a vampire. That's just, that just goes without saying.
Yeah, but we kept our distance. We're on the phone, so it's not like we're in danger.
Well, do you? They didn't. The spooks and spookettes didn't have to know that.
I'd be all right sitting right beside you.
Well, thank you. That's maybe someday I can take you up on that.
I'd love to meet a real life vampire.
Yeah, that sounds like a bucket list goal kind of thing.
Well, at least you were interviewed by one, so if that was on your bucket list, you can definitely cross that one out.
Yeah, I tell you what, man, what are you doing on November 9th? You want to come out to the premiere?
Well, I'll have to check with my producers, but that would be a sight to see.
I will tell you though, it is in the evening, so no worries about the sun.
Oh no, and I appreciate that. You know how inconvenient it is to go to a movie premiere in the daylight. Just all the hustle and bustle of getting me the right sunscreen and then the right umbrella and the right tinted car window. It's a hassle. I don't see how the producers put up with it, but But anyway, where can we follow up on any news about Jed or any other projects that you folks are working on?
Well, we have all of our Jed updates posted directly on our Facebook for Jed. It should be facebook.com/JedTrilogy. And that should be all of our... We have like a ton of photos and we have the trailers and any updates on how we're doing, where we're at. As well as we are going to post a contest soon for someone to win a couple of tickets to our cast and crew premiere. So if anyone's interested, keep an eye out on the Jed Facebook page. I also post updates on our production Facebook page, Outlandish Productions. And we also have a website as well where we have all of our trailers and things that we're working on, what's coming up, and that's outlandishproductions.net.
We will be sure to have all the links posted on our show notes page. But unfortunately, that's all the time that we have this evening. But Lauren, Laura May, I really appreciate you joining me this evening on Count Drahoon's Feature of Fright. And I wish you very well on the premiere of Jed. And if you, in the future, if you have any other horror-related projects, feel free to give your Count a ring and we'll have you back on the show.
I definitely will. Thanks for having us, Count.
Yeah, I actually write a few horror shorts of my own, so yeah.
Oh, you'll have to send them to me. I'm interested.
They're quite good.
Yeah, I have one on Amazon Prime that you can watch now. It's called Crispy with a C.
Ooh.
It was my first short film I wrote and starred in.
Okay. No, I'll check it out, and I will. I'll actually get me the link, and then I'll definitely post that on the show notes page because that's great. Cool. That's very fascinating.
Sweet.
Yeah, thank you.
Spooks and Spookettes, like I said, we are running out of time, but be sure to join us next time for yet another feature of Fright. Until then, as far as things go, when things go bump in the night...
There are such things.
Want to help the show grow? Well, you can start by leaving us a review on iTunes. Go to your iTunes account, click on Podcasts, type in Count Rahoon's Feature of Fright. Once you hit the main page, go to Ratings and Reviews, and click Write a Review. The more reviews we get, the higher we move up in the iTunes rankings, and the closer we get to world domination. Thank you, Spooks and Spookettes.